And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 84. 84 is a good number. 84 is one of the best years of Master of the Universe, and the world was introduced to me, Tyler Baker, in the year 1984.
Oh, dear God.
It's a wonderful number. A lot of great movies came out in 84. Karate Kid and Terminator and Ghostbusters and Nightmare on Elm Street. And we got Clawful, and we got Jitsu, and we got Fisto, and we got Webstore and Clawful and well, I said Clawful already, Cobra Con and Stridor and so on and so on. Anyway, this is Fans of Power, episode 84. Every time I see the number 84, it's a magical number to me. I could go on and on about how great the number is.
Are we going to build this up now for every episode when 85 will say the wave and everything?
Well, 85, I guess say Rambo First Blood Part 2 came out in 85.
Oh, dear God, I'm going to freak out.
The board and the Cyclone and Too Bad in 1985.
87, you might have a heart attack.
Came out. What?
I said in 87, you'll probably have a heart attack. We know what's going to happen for 87.
With live-action movie Predator and RoboCop all coming out in the same year, along with the final wave of the He-Man toy that gave us Clamp and Scareglow and Mosquitor and King Randor, and then I just keel over.
And not a single mention of a Friday the 13th movie, but whatever. So, hey, so how's it going?
That is where you come in.
Okay, all right.
Yes. But, yes, I'm Tyler T-Rex Baker here, and of course is the Rotten Amato himself, Ma Joe Locke.
Here we go.
Demand the trademark, along with our infamous producer, Douglas Dirt.
So, that's Joe the Tomato Amato.
I never heard that, girl. I never heard tomato, tomato, amato, amato. Never happened once.
What about the drink Clamato? That would be a great gimmick for you to be pretending you're drinking Clamato.
Wait, I could sip it through the mouth here. I could have like a little hole right here and just sip it through the mouth.
Yeah. Put like a little hole for a straw and you just kind of fit the straw through that hole and you're just kind of sipping it. You're like, how the hell is Modula drinking Clamato, you know?
Oh, shoot. All right, man. So, T-Rex, this week was kind of it seemed pretty eventful with a lot of different bits of news. I mean, there were some things like, first, let's just start off with She-Ra. They showed, Sideshow showed her statue, which looks really good. I mean, it's different than obviously what most people might expect. But remember, Sideshow is giving them more of a real, there you go. It's right there. I mean, given all the characters, He-Man, Skeletor, Evil Lyn, a twist, but a realism look. So, I mean, I've heard some people complain, oh, she doesn't look like Filmation enough, but she's not supposed to be. This isn't supposed to be a Filmation. She were just like He-Man, Skeletor, and Evil Lyn aren't like anything we ever seen. But, and then I've actually heard some people say, even with how she looks there, her realistic look, that she still looks too bright. So she kind of can't win either way for whatever reason with fans, but she looks great. She is going to be, I think, what, $400 to $500? So if you got the money.
And make $1,000 at this point.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I can't afford it. For those who can afford her, she is a fantastic-looking statue, though. But that's for, again, for people who can afford her. So that's the thing for her for the Sideshow statue. The next thing is, Tappers of Grayskull, I think, on June 14th is going to have an update to where they're going to implement She-Ra. I don't know everything that's going to be done, if they're going to do things where they might pop in, more people from the cartoon or have whatever different role. I don't know, but
they need a big Dialamug popping up for the little rebellion to be smacking against, you know, and Dialamug's face is changing expressions as they're beating the hell out of them.
Now that would be fun because they always, you're right. All the characters in the game, you're hitting somebody doing something, but I could picture that as he's getting hit. Zoom.
His mouth is spinning from angry to sad. And the eyes are spinning from, you know, angry to like, oh my God, you know, It'd be a great gimmick.
That would be cool. So that's that. And another thing for She-Ra. Now, this is a rumor that's floated around for a while, but for whatever reason, it popped up again. They talked about how DreamWorks possibly could be doing a new She-Ra cartoon. Now, this has got a lot of people excited and others thinking, and here's why. They showed like people who were trying out for the voice acting for a lot of these roles. They're all preteen or teenage girls so far. I mean, what I'm getting at is not that it's a problem because they're girls, because obviously this is going to be a girl-centric cartoon, but just like back in the 80s when He-Man and She-Ra was not geared towards 30, 40-year-old men and was geared towards kids, this one, with the voices obviously being younger girls, it's probably going to be an even younger geared cartoon towards girls. So if anybody's thinking they're going to get any serious tone, it ain't going to happen. You know, especially for the people that pick on He-Man, She-Ra saying, oh, that cartoon was never serious enough. Oh, it was too kiddie. Well, if they thought that was kiddie, this one's, I mean, it's definitely going to be kiddie if it even happens. I mean, what would you even expect from it, Tyler? Are you expecting some serious tone cartoon or? I mean,
I don't expect anything right off because DreamWorks has been attached before of doing a He-Man animated film or some sort of feature years ago. I mean, at one point they had the director of Kung Fu Panda 2 geared to direct the new He-Man movie. So I'm like, no, I don't believe any of it for a second. But if we did get it, they're going to have She-Ra. It's going to be like a Hannah Montana cartoon. You know, the girls are going to be, you know, very young teenage girls and kind of, you know, over the top bubblegum. I can't imagine anything in that. And the Horde will not be in it.
There won't be a Horde act.
But you're going to have Catra and Traptra, which I'm sure some She-Ra fans are fine with that. But if the you're missing a great deal of audience, you're just going to make it a really light, fluffy, pink, cotton candy, bubblegum, beat you over the head with rainbows kind of idea where the toy line was targeted towards girls and not boys, and the cartoon was targeted towards girls, but boys could like it because of He-Man and the Horde and Skeletor and a lot of other characters crossing over. And I certainly do not feel that they're going to go in that direction where they're gonna, they can win over He-Man fans.
I doubt it. I doubt
He-Man. I would expect... I can't imagine even adult She-Ra fans, unless you were just, you know, you really like the, you know, you want She-Ra kind of doing this with their, you know, cheeks and stuff like that. And
yeah, I feel they'll kiddie it up a lot and make it. I mean, the thing is,
we're just doing an obscene, obnoxious amount. I don't know. This is just all hypothetical. She-Ra fans can say I'm full of it right now, but I would want, you know. And I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if I'll get around to seeing it because I'm pissed off at everything that DC's done currently. But everything I'm hearing about Wonder Woman, the current Wonder Woman film, the things I've heard about it sounds like that's the way you do a female, you know, lead-inspired, you know, action movie.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard a lot of good stuff about it. And if you're going to do a She-Ra series, and I don't like seeing copying stuff, it's treating the source material that way. You're not making a Wonder Woman who makes a lot of jabs that, you know, I'm a woman and I'm tough, or this is a woman's world, or she makes a lot of, you know, she has like what's her name, the one of the obnoxious girls from the Ghostbusters room. I can't remember which one. Melissa McCarthy. You got her, you know, running around, falling down and stuff, and making stupid. It's like no. This needs to be treated with dignity. She-Ra deserves to be treated with the utmost respect. Not just for She-Ra fans, but for everybody who's a fan of Masters of the Universe in general. I would want to see a kick-ass attempt at She-Ra. A lot of great episodes and information we talked about before, and we'll continue talking about it. She-Ra deserves every much attention and proper treatment as He-Man, Transformers, Turtles, Silverhawks, Thundercats, Mask, Cops, Dino Ride, any property that could be turned into a movie. She-Ra deserves it should be treated no differently.
No, I agree.
And when Joe and I was at the beach during this week, so I didn't hear some of this information, a lot of this information that Joe had mentioned as it was happening. I found out when I got back, and I just kind of rolled my eyes at that. I'm like, DreamWorks has been attached before, and when he's telling me that a lot of the actors or actresses that are auditioning are youngsters, it just tells me that they're going for. I mean, they'll probably have Sarah Silverman, you know, come in and do like an obnoxious voice for Catcher or something like.
No, that. No, I mean, I doubt he. Even that would happen. I think it would just be all kids in general, just like a Horde, Mantana, anything like that. It'd be Catcher, probably be just like the original vintage Princess of Power mini comics. So yeah, there's no way you're going to see Hordak. But especially with this time, with this kind of like, you know, a girl power movement to where, you know, like you want to inspire young girls, give them something to where they can look up to here, just like they're doing with Wonder Woman. You figure this would be a great time. Let's try to bring She-Ra back and give young girls to look up to somebody. But if they turn it into just a bubblegum thing to where it's just a lot of jokes and modern stuff, like heck, they might even put cell phones and tablets into the cartoon. I feel they're going to just, they'd wreck it. So I doubt it's even.
Yeah, they are the two obnoxious girls from Two Broke Girls to play She-Ra and Catcher or something like that. And you got, what's her name? Cat whatever her name is, making like all these sarcastic, you know, gothy, you know, emo jokes that she does on that piece of. But anyway,
nice though. But I want
something that's done with She-Ra done with, I mean, the most respect you can give it, because She-Ra to me as a young child was just as much fun to watch as He-Man was.
Yes,
not
she
just
was.
Because of she. I liked the character. I liked what she. I thought she was a badass. I thought her friends were badasses. I thought it was all cool. I didn't get the vibe that this was a show meant for girls. Even when I went to the store, I'm renting Volume 2. I was unashamed to rent the cartoon. I was ashamed to go to the toy aisle and see all the figures are covered, you know, carded on pink. I'm like, I can't be seen buying this. No, see, young boy in Toys R Us.
That's, you're right. There's kind of a difference. When you watch the cartoon, it felt like you said, a guy cartoon. It was. It was a guy cartoon. It felt just like you were watching.
And just so we're clear, I'm not saying that the She-Ra cartoon should be targeted towards men and given a high dose of testosterone. It's not what I'm saying.
No, just give the girls
that something. She-Ra fans who love the cartoon can appreciate what was received. Just like I can, just like Joe can, and anybody else listening here, we've done, you know, Huntar. That is a woman fighting another woman episode. The Horde is in the background on this, and it was solid. And there's so many more episodes to talk about that don't have He-Man in it that are fantastic episodes. That She-Ra is, you know, like she's the star and she's what makes the episode good. So there's, you know, Stone and the Sword, prime example of a kick-ass episode that's written very well. But
no, it's true. It's just
I guess I'm getting.
No, I know what you're saying, but no, it's just if they're to go from seeing Wonder Woman and being inspired by a female that's a hero like that, and then go to the She-Ra cartoon that might be real bubblegum-like, it's like, don't do that to She-Ra. Give her the same treatment as you're doing for Wonder Woman. So, like I said, this is all hypothetical anyway, because I doubt the cartoon's even...
I don't think it's going to happen, just like a new He-Man movie. It ain't going to happen, not while Sony's running the show. And
but they said December in 2019 it's going to happen, Tyler. We're going to get the movie.
Sure Tom Hardy's going to come out and play the world's most iconic version of Venom, even more iconic than Todd McFarlane's interpretation, more iconic than the way Mark Bagley. It's all going to be redefined because Sony cast Tom Hardy in a Venom movie that has not been introduced in any form of Spider-Man. You know, I'm sorry. So as long as Sony is running the show, we're all just going to be, you know, like Al Bundy when he's fed up with Peg changing clothes. He grabs his tie and just, oh God, just hangs himself. That's my attitude towards this. Not trying to kill dreams. I'm just tired of being had so many times. Right. So
yeah, it would be great and to be good if she was
would be great, but not in these hands. And
just don't hold your breath.
Like I said before, until these properties are treated with dignity and aren't Michael Bay'd up and dumbed down for people who don't know anything about the property, and we're going to focus on that instead of bringing in the fans who've kept the property relevant all these years. We're going to disregard them. And bring in the people who are like, I remember that toy line when I was a kid. Oh, man, look at the big turtle. He's so big, and Megan Fox has big boobies. You know, it's just, no. That She-Ra does not need to be treated in any form like that.
Right. I completely agree.
Yes.
So, one quick thing. As for things coming out, there's a Funko Pop of Man-at-Arms that you can pre-order. So that's another pop figure in case people want to get that. That's cool for Man-at-Arms. Now, here's a sad piece of news, unfortunately. Super 7 announced that they can't do the Thundercats line. They're not going to be able to continue that for Classic. So it's unfortunate. We were all hoping it would happen. Now it's going to happen. What's happening now? Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Raising a candle for the future of the beloved members of Third Earth here.
Nah, yeah, it sucks. It sucks it doesn't happen, but hey, whoever does get it, and if it happens in the future, you know, hopefully they can do an amazing job. We can get different scaled figures, everything. I'm sure something great can come. I mean, it sucks it's not going to continue, because especially getting a good start to the figures that we had.
For crying out loud, man, how many more times is the toner going to have to be restarted again and again and again and again? Yeah. All because, you know, not just Warner Brothers, but other issues we're not privy to are going on with this license here that you know, no, Thundercats, go back to the starting line, get back to the bench. We're not ready for you yet. You'll get your chance. We can't tell you when.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's just frustrating as hell.
Yeah, it's like watching with He-Man.
This is the third attempt in less than 10 years. I mean, I count that classics line that got stopped immediately. You had the cartoon reboot that got stopped pretty quick, and you had this that got stopped pretty quick. You know, it's just in anything from the Tall Mezcos. I don't know how if they plan on making any more, but it just feels like the Thundercats line never gets to finish ever. No. I guess you could say three, because the LGN line was going to give us Lunatax and other great things, and it was canceled. And then you have the reboot, it was canceled. We get classic figures to sit next to our He-Man figures, it's canceled. Oh, man.
It sucks. It does. It does suck, and it's unfortunate. But if it ever comes back again, hopefully they'll get something that gives them
justice. And please, whoever is, if you happen to be stumbling upon our podcast or something like that, at least take into consideration of getting in touch with the Horsemen about this. I don't want to see anybody else doing these toys unless it's going to be somebody who wants to meet the same standard of quality as the Horsemen have done with classics and what few Thundercat figures we've got. What Bandai screwing the pooch on that one? You know, it's Thundercats like Chira deserve to be treated with some damn respect.
Yeah, and also a different level, meaning I know I'm probably going to be the outcast here where nobody wants to agree, because this is basically a Masters themed podcast. So I remember a lot of the Masters fans, when they were seeing the Thundercat figures that were released first and they had the 8-inch ones, they all said, I don't like it. They're bigger than the He-Man figures. They should be in the same scale. And then, of course, when Classics came, I mean, when they announced they were doing them in Classic style from Mattel, they're going to be the same size. Everybody rejoiced. I always try to say, Thundercats is a different toy property. I mean, think about it in the 80s. When they came out, they weren't supposed to be in scale with He-Man, and the Thundercats figures were bigger than He-Man back in that day.
You just don't get it, do you, Joe? These two properties are like peanut butter and jelly. They're like spaghetti and meatballs. They're like ham and cheese. They go together. They're completely... No. What do you mean, no?
No, it's like, well let's throw the turtles in there, too. Let's put everybody...
Why not? You're going to sit there and tell me that for some reason Mattel and Playmates want to make a joint alliance? You know, we're going to have the Horsemen design turtle figures. They're going to be the same size as He-Man figures. I'm like, oh, no, you can't do that. And I'm like,
no, this was even before
hell,
that.
Who the hell are you
to say that? No, that was before it. Have
Leonardo standing side by side with his katana blade and He-Man and his power sword. I'm glad you're hiding behind a mask here. You got to be ashamed to show your real face.
Listen, they said this. The Masters fans were saying it even before they got a hold of it. They, for some reason,
know they were.
And listen, now shut it. Now you're going to hold on a second. They were sitting there saying, no, the Thundercat figures should not be bigger than He-Man. They should be in same scale. And I always said, these are two different properties. Why do they have to be in same scale? Back then they were taller. They can be taller now. Plus, I like it because you can have different sizes. They don't all have to be the same. But I always looked at them as leaner and sometimes buffer cat-type people. Let them be bigger warriors. It makes it dazzle for me. I like it. It's better display. I think
no. If you're going to sit there and try and size up the vintage figures of Thundercats and He-Man, they're so disproportionate. You can't have – look at it from a child's perspective when you're a kid. My G.I. Joes play with figures that were the same size as other G.I. Joes. All right. I hope Joe falls down and just cracks his head wide open right now here. And I take over the podcast what they really want, which is the damn truth of it here, while Joe's like, I can't customize that. That's what it is.
I know what it is.
It's like if we don't keep it completely different, it's like means Joe can't customize He-Man and Thundercat size. Joe can't customize Lino and He-Man size. It all comes down to Joe trying to corner the market on these two badass properties being the same size here, because that hurts Joe's wallet. It all comes down to the dollars here, and that's what this is here. Are you writing an apology for me down there?
Oh, no.
There you go.
I like my Zorn figure. At least he's in scale with He-Man. So, yeah, I guess they should all be in the same scale. So we got Son of Zorn. He's in scale. They should have Jason Voorhees be in scale with He-Man. We should have them all. Give them all the same.
Yeah, if they all should have the Amato stamp of approval in the corner of the card that's customized by the Amato himself here. Otherwise, if we were to do it the correct way, it would be preposterous, and Joe would be the posh English gentleman who says, "Oh, my God, this would go against the Queen's fans for it."
Like I said, I've heard it. Listen, shut up. So if you had your choice of a Thundercat line, let's say it was a brand new one done, well, by Four Horsemen, whoever it may be, some amazing sculptors, and they had a choice of, let's just do a Thundercats line where we put all the figures the same size, or let's do a Thundercats line where they could be in different sizes, different poses, everything else, have a different proportions. What would you rather have, a whole same scale of them or different? I want different. I want the Horseman's treatment like they did with the Stactions and all the 2000 X figures of different sizes. That's something that could be.
I'm talking about, but those were made in the proportion of the 2000 X toy, and that Clawful was given proper treatment of being a big Hulk of a character that you could set next to Skeletor in the toy line. You don't get it, do you?
You don't get it, because they were doing this even before they had the classics, before they made the classic style Thundercats, and then they were doing the ones that was, what was it, Bandai or Mezco, when they had the 8-inch ones, they were saying, no, they should be the same size as classics.
Exactly, like, they should be, because traditional He-Man fans want to have Lion-O and He-Man next to each other, and Lion-O not standing a good foot taller than He-Man.
But he should, because he's taller. He was always
Lion-O
taller.
Is not considered this behemoth character, even on the cartoon. He's not Extendar in comparison here. Do you understand the logic here? Or are you just so consumed with, I can't customize that. If they do that, then where are my customs going to go? I have no more customs I got to do. I'm going to be out. I'll be on the street eating out of a bucket.
Tyler Baker.
They're eating out of a bucket for Seinfeld fans there.
See, and then, oh dear God, I think every episode we get a Seinfeld reference, and I've never watched the show a day in my life.
And Joe, you just continue to sink deeper in the quicksand by saying you don't want He-Man to get the same size, and then you continue to say, I've never seen Seinfeld a day in my life.
God, how many people out there, of course, they're probably all going to agree with you. I've never watched that.
Take a poll right now, and even if it's like two people in the chat room, two people right now. I
well,
guarantee
we know
those two people have watched Seinfeld in their life.
We know Dirt's going to hold his hand up. I don't watch it.
Joe.
All right, so far, it looks as if everybody in the chat room has seen Seinfeld because it's one of the most popular TV shows in the history of television.
Not just by cliche and mention, because it's just that damn funny.
Oh, God. Well, whatever. We'll pass over the Seinfeld thing right
so,
now.
So, fans of the chat room, I drink to you.
Oh, dear God. I can't believe it. Well, you guys go ahead. I'll agree with Tyler and everybody else's. Seinfeld.
I'm tired of being right there, Joe.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm sure they probably all agree with you with the size of the Thundercats, too, but...
We're all tired of being right.
All right, well, let's move on to something else that we can hopefully all be right with. What's our next topic? Who's the character spotlight?
Oh, boy. For long-time listeners of the podcast know that we have touched on this character before, but as long-time listeners, notice we've started to go back and upgrade certain topics of discussion. And rightfully so, our character bio is on Jitsu, a character that, I mean, I could spend the rest of the podcast just talking about nothing else, just talking about this particular villain. And it really bothers me for the longest time that there's a lot of characters that have been shortchanged from cartoon appearances, many comic appearances, use in the various forms of media, whether it be Golden Books, or it be magazines, or it be comic books. Jitsu is somebody you'd be hard pressed. I mean, there's a lot of characters that never have gotten a full time in the spotlight. He certainly is one of them. He could be your number one. He could be your number five, because there's quite a few who have not been used a whole lot. And I've never understood why Jitsu, you look at him, I'm like, this to me, and I've said before in the podcast, I hold him in high regard because as a child, I viewed him as someone who was almost as like a physical equivalent to He-Man, at least strength-wise, that you could see He-Man and Jitsu duking it out, aside from the fact that you had this established rivalry. Man, I've always had trouble saying that word. Between Jitsu and Fisto, and you never really got to see that outside the Clash of Arms, which is hinted at, and, you know, the pajama artwork that Errol McCarthy had done. You don't really see a whole lot of it, but you see it in, like, the Night Stalker Jitsu 2-pack. They're coming at each other. But it's a character that And Michael Reeves said this on the original DVD release, which kind of makes me think why this character was kind of maybe shied away a certain bit, was that when he was writing the script for Dragon Invasion, he sees the character model for this character and sees he's Asian. He's a villain that's Asian. And he says, is it going to be all right for me to use this character? It's not going to offend anybody. So but just based on that story alone makes me think that maybe after the character was released, maybe they thought, which I'm like, it's the 80s. You had villains of all shapes and sizes. Why is it in 1984 a villain that's Asian is going to piss off people or offend people? When I heard him say that on that interview, I just thought, even in 84, people are bitching and moaning over stereotypes and stuff like that. I mean, I was furious when I saw Kerry Tagawa was playing Shang Tsung and it wasn't Steven Dorff. I mean, I'm offended by this. We have an Asian man playing an Asian villain here, and even though the hero is Asian, playing played by an Asian actor, I'm bothered that you know a generic Caucasian is not playing an evil sorcerer. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know, unless we ask an executive from Mattel as to like why Jitsu was not pushed quite so heavy, but I think that's a character that could I mean really has so much potential I see him as a villain who can carry episodes of the cartoon, who can carry a story as the lead villain. He just looks like every He-Man villain can for that matter, but that's my starting point for this character. Joe, what do you got to say?
Well, Jitsu, that is a shame that I know that they did say that they thought because of, stereotypes and racial stereotypes that maybe it wouldn't float over well. And that's why they didn't put him in any more episodes. You rarely seen him in any mini comics. I don't know if it was like maybe three of them he was in
He was in that. I think the Mantana comic, and he's like fighting for the Horde. And he's also in the Hordak mini comic as well. So,
and of course, Clash of Arms. And yeah,
Clash of Arms is his pinnacle moment, yeah, in my opinion. But
no, I mean, I remember getting the figure. Of course, you always like, you know, the yin yang of him and Fisto. They seemed like they were just destined to be rivals. And also, yeah, like you said, by the box art with Stridor and Nightstalker and how they both were on the, you know, ones for those. It's a shame that they couldn't have went any further. Because here's the thing. You got to think about into the 70s and even into the 80s. It always seemed like martial arts, action movies, kung fu, that's always popular. I wouldn't have seen absolutely no problem with this guy with this golden hand and being a martial artist. It's like, why would that have been so offensive? I mean, especially if they would represent any other race. I mean, I don't get it. How is it?
Well, and then you have to remember, too, they go back and release Ninjor, whose face looks very similar to Jitsu. But the part of the gimmick is you can take the mask off. You know, and it's like, so you kind of makes you wonder, maybe not from Mattel's standpoint, they felt like, you know, releasing this character was going to upset the Asian community or any kind of activist for that matter by marketing an Asian character in a toy line as a bad guy, which I don't know. But the 80s was the heyday of like, you know, great cheesy, action movies.
Martial arts. Yeah, like I said, Chuck Norris, Van Damme, everybody was still watching Bruce Lee movies. I don't understand it. It makes, like I said, absolutely no sense to me.
If you're worried about that, then give us a heroic Asian warrior if you're worried about that, you know? And I'd be open and still am to getting, you know, not for pandering's sake, because these characters look cool. That's good. I'm not for pandering, but I'm saying if you're worried about that, give us a badass heroic warrior that's maybe a samurai, kind of, so to speak, you know, of a Ronin of some kind or something like that. But I find it so sad that this character looks so cool. He's the master of the martial arts. We have a master of weapons, a master of water, a master over the beast, a lord of destruction. You have evil, you know, and heroic, you know, sorcerers, and to have a master of the martial arts, well, that sounds as logical as having a master, evil master of odors with Stinkor, and you have Moss Man. And,
that's what I mean. It was just a gimmick. That's all it was supposed to be. I mean, his name, Jitsu, comes from ninjutsu. I mean, immediately you're thinking martial arts, and like I said, everybody loved martial arts in whatever form. So you got a kick out of this character, and who didn't like taking his hand and trying to make him chop like this, chop like that, or just do anything? You got a kick. You wanted to see more of it. I mean, like I said, when you're loving and idolizing martial artists back there, from even bad guys to good guys, I never seen the issue. And of course, you know, where I grew up, it was really multicultural, so I never seen problems with any of the races being in something, because I'm around every race. So I think, to me, it just blew my mind. It's so
sad. Well, yeah, and same way, you know, I mean, I just never thought such things. I just thought, like, this is an awesome character. I didn't get the toy for many years into my young childhood. I eventually got him from a friend in elementary school who didn't want him anymore. But I just thought that this guy was a badass. That's it. Like, I don't see, oh, he's Asian, or that character's this, or that character's like, no, this guy looks like a badass. He comes with the opposite version. As a child, I didn't know his name was Night Stalker, but I'm like, he comes with the evil version of the horse. This is awesome. I gotta have this. And
right.
And that's that. And I saw it as nothing more than, I imagine a lot of kids in the 80s, you know, when they saw him, they didn't think, you know, oh, dear God, what? Think of the children. And then up pops, you know, Reverend Lovejoy's wife.
Right. Oh,
you know, goodness. It bothers me. But like I said, this is just getting Michael Reeves' take, I guess, when he's writing the story, making sure that using an Asian character was not going to piss off anybody, even though Mattel's working on this character. He's written into the Bible as Chopper, not Jitsu. It would be changed by Mattel to Jitsu.
And he didn't even get called anything in that episode, did he?
Yeah, they don't even name check him, which bothers me. That he we thank James E. Talk for this information, but he is in the script Chopper, which apparently was going to be Strong Arm at one point. Thank James E. Talk for that, right, for the storyboard. Strong Arm was going to be in Dragon Invasion and not Jitsu. However, that swapped out. A new character's coming down the line. It's going to be Jitsu, but he's not ninja. And that bothered me as a kid. I'm like, it's Jitsu, clear as day. His hand looks more flesh tone instead of, like, right, the big, big gold hand. But I'm like, dude, that's Jitsu. Same armor, everything. And when he says, you trapped the source of the dragon, I'm like, oh, man, he's talking. This is great. He's sitting at the castle table and everything. This is great. But it bothered me that when – and they did this with Lizard Man. And I almost felt like this was Filmation's way of making sure that the audience sees this character front and center by himself, because – the cast of Evil Warriors walks into Grayskull. You got Skeletor, Panthor, Trap Joe, and Evil-Land, and then slow behind, which I'm like, Jitsu wouldn't be a slow nod on a log, but he's walking very slowly into Grayskull, and I'm like, I didn't like the idea that he was lingering behind as if like he was the weakest link. I'm like, dude, this is Jitsu, man, the master of martial arts. That guy would be booking it in there faster than Panthor.
That's a shame.
But I just took it as, like, when you're watching that, they want to make sure the kids see this brand-new character all by himself, that you do not forget what this character looks like. And, of course, you go to the toy store in 1984, this cartoon scene in 83. There's the Asian guy that was in Dragon Invasion. He chops things in half and smacked, you know, Ram-Man around. But,
And then we never hear came, you know, fast forward to the, you know, the days of MYP cartoon. And of course, even, you know, the 2000 X figures. I always call the cartoon MYP, the figures 2000 X. It's just what I do. Either way, same era. Well, here comes the cartoon. Never came in the cartoon. Here came the figures. No figures. But then when the figure line stopped and here came Stactions, we got one of the most beautiful Stactions in history with that Jitsu one. And the re-envisioning, if you will, what the Horseman did, and especially with that cool gemmed up, you know, golden.
Oh, man, it made you feel like the Horseman's idea of him is just like it gave extra meaning to his hand, as if like this wasn't just something that he had done. This is, looks like it's something that maybe his clan, like the temple that he studied martial, like this was like the ultimate, you know, iron fist, you know, like you could kind of say it like that, where it's like fists look like it was forged out of, you know, metal. This looks like it was either formed out of, you know, iron or,
yeah, because it had a robotic kind of look,
or gold, like pure gold. I mean obviously it looks like gold, but when you think iron fist, you know, that's like kind of a martial arts reference there. But it's fun to think that, you know, you don't have much of a background for jiu-jitsu, but obviously somebody who kind of like, look at it this way, like in the very first Ninja Turtles cartoon, when you got Splinter and Shredder in the same, in the training in the same clan, the Foot Clan, Shredder's a prick, Splinter's a good guy. And it's all you see, that Shredder's portrayed as this evil douchebag. You know, you see Splinter is his rival, Matayoshi frames him, gets him kicked out. That's what I kind of see jiu-jitsu being, as someone who always was a prick from a child, always wanted the upper, or thinking like the Octagon, Sakura, you know, with Chuck Norris and his evil half-brother Sakura, always bothered. He wants to be the best at all costs, and would cheat, would kill, would steal, would do whatever he could to show that I'm the best martial artist. There is nobody better than me.
Yeah.
You know, and I like to think that, you know, obviously that Fisto and Jitsu have got a eye for an eye thing going on, where Jitsu probably took Fisto's right hand. Well, in return, Fisto comes back with his big broadsword and returns the favor. And now you've got a great feud between these two. Every time they come into battle, man, it's just like it's going to be blood, you know, blood broken teeth.
That could have been great, because like I said, we never got any kind of origin story of Jitsu, unfortunately. Yeah. But if we could have pictured an MYP, instead of getting this stupid, sad, old, drunken Fisto and bangs his hand into a wall to where it's
all stuff. Oh, man, I hate that someone for the passion.
Could you picture it? I know, so I mean, could you picture if they would have did something better? If, like you said, Jitsu could have been maybe a rival to him, because Fisto already has this gigantic hand. So maybe they would have been rivals in some kind of fight, and Jitsu already has. Let's picture. He has his golden hand with those jewels that maybe enhances strength. Whatever. He could have some kind of different ability. But maybe, like you said, within battle, Jitsu's like, well, you might have this, but I have the better golden hand or the power. And he does chop off Fisto's hand. So then Fisto then goes to get a revamp himself. And then when they come back to meet in battle, like he's walking, you can see him walking in the shadows, and Jitsu's like, oh, you come back for more? And then Fisto would raise up. He's like, yeah, now I'm ready for you. He has this big new iron, you know, fist. That would have been a cool rivalry to have them going back and forth constantly, but we never got
it. It's like a great wrestling feud. You build these two up, and then you want to see them clash in the ring at the big, you know, tentpole pay-per-view. And that's what these two should have done. A new He-Man cartoon, you could plant the seeds for this. You know, I almost would rather see Jitsu already got the right hand. Decides, you know, maybe it's like Yakuza. He talked too much. So they cut off his own arm, and he has it replaced with this forged, brand new, I mean, gold, pure gold. Because, you know, I can see him being kind of a vain character. He sees treasures. It's great and it's wonderful. And he's greedy almost. So he has his right hand forged in just like solid gold with jeweled up with sacred stones in there or something like that. And you could really build up a good feud between him and Fisto in the cartoon. You know, and implied that he took Fisto's hand, and Fisto's a good guy, but he's like, you know what? I'm going to come right back. I'm going to build my right hand up, and I'm going to beat the living hell out of this guy. One way or another, I'm going to get. And they both fight with swords, samurai versus broadsword. You know,
they do, and it would be nice. Like you said, it would be great that if a new cartoon happened, please don't wait, don't fart around. Get Jitsu right in from the start. Let him be right there from the start. And then you said, like, we could have the battles between him and Fisto, but don't think, hey, maybe we'll wait for season two and then the cartoon gets canceled, then again, no Jitsu or whatever. It's like, don't waste time. This is a character that is so underused, but is so over. He's so appreciated. Fans love him. Character. I mean, heck, they at least try to give him some respect in the new bios by making him be the ruler of Snake Mountain in the, you know, new classics bios. So they tried to do something for this guy that just, he gets, I mean, not to be, you know, pun intended, but he's the Rodney Dangerfield of the Evil Warriors. No, he gets no respect.
He doesn't get no respect. I mean, you look at the guy, how can you look at that character and not think that this guy would be great in all kinds of action sequences? I mean, you could have him is a mercenary that Skeletor goes through frequently. Like, he's a hired martial artist, you know, or he is a regular evil warrior, or he joins up with Skeletor at some point. Like, he works on his own company, joins up with Skeletor, and Skeletor decides to hire him because he doesn't have any martial arts expert in his group. I mean, you could really build up the Jitsu's introduction to a brand new interpretation. And, I mean, just give him, like Terry Funk says, right, his balls big enough to come in a dump truck. This guy needs to be taken so seriously, you know, not just with, you know, how he's portrayed, but when you see him in fights, that He's just as good with hand-to-hand combat as he is with his left hand in samurai sword fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to believe this guy can slice the wicks. Like Anthony DeLonges. This guy needs to be able to slice the wicks off four candles with his left hand. And you like to think that he's right-handed. So to lose his right hand, he's got to be damn good with his left hand.
Mm-hmm.
With that samurai sword, which just makes him that much more dead. I mean, there's so much you could do with this character, and it bugs the hell out of me that to this day, anytime He-Man t-shirts, He-Man lunchboxes, whatever, it's either a very poor version of Filmation, you know, stock or something like that, where they change He-Man's face color and his hair color and all this stuff, and you never get Jitsu. Ever. You know, why not put Jitsu on a tank top for men or women, or Put him on a nice, cool lunchbox or something like that. Just use him, man. He's so underused, and I'm sick and tired of waiting around for somebody to get it together to give us a new He-Man cartoon or a He-Man movie. Give us some good He-Man comics and feature Jitsu prominently. Make him the lead villain of a three part story arc or something like that, or give us a three shot. Or three issue mini shot of Jitsu and Fister's feud building up.
It could be fun.
You know, issue one, Fister loses his hand. Issue two, Jitsu loses his, or vice versa. Issue three, they collide. You know, and you're up and running, and you establish why these two hate each other in the basic story. Like I just feel like you could have so much fun establishing Stridor and Nightstalker. Like Jitsu steals the technology of Stridor and creates his own, or has it created. Talks to Skeletor like, you know, I need a steed. You want me to do my best? Give me a steed, or something like that. You know, you could really play up this whole feud between the two horses and these two men who've lost their right hands and build up this like such ultimate badasses on the side of good and the side of evil. I could not wait. The gentleman and buddy, I forget your name. I should have wrote this down here, but he knows who he is when he asks us if we've done Jitsu. So I will get your name correct and remember to say it on another show. But thanks to his curiosity, we've done Jitsu. I'm glad to hear that, you know, and I know not others appreciate it too, that this is a character that needs attention. He needs to be shown proper, you know, given the spotlight for more than just a few seconds. Don't just draw him in the background of one panel and say, "Oh man, there's Jitsu over there," and then he's off and gone. You know, this is, he needs to be fleshed out. I love, and like a new cartoon, I love to have Kerry Tagawa. And I bring it all right back to Kerry Tagawa. You know, Shang Tsung from the Mortal Kombat movie, the first one. I love to have him voice Jitsu. He's got a good, he can play villain. He's so good. I'd love to see him play Jitsu, like, voice-wise.
It would be great, like I said, just to see him back one form or another, because even in the new recent comics, I don't even know how many they did, because like I said, I didn't look at every Eternity War.
But I quit after just a short time. I threw them in my closet, what few I have. I need to take time to burn all those, too, on the podcast maybe at some point.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, he's never wrong, but I mean, it would be nice, like I said, if he does have a comeback, have a little bit of an origin story for him, and then they could show the reason why him and Fisto feud, but then he could be a character that could be prominent. He could be a main baddie that's with Skeletor that you take seriously, that's not somebody that is always the butt end of a joke or picked on. I don't see him as that. I see him as a person that would be almost like a right-hand man to Skeletor. Somebody very serious that when something needs to be done, taken care of, Skeletor is going to call in Jitsu to get this done. But
yeah, you see Skeletor sitting on his bone throne and he's holding, you know, he's having visitors or something like that. I can see Jitsu standing right next to him.
Right in back of him, just on cross.
Not saying a word. Is
we did
stone
at the same
face.
Time. Yep, just like that.
Yeah, Skeletor like is pissed off by something that some peasant came in and offered him. He looks at Jitsu, doesn't say a word, and Jitsu knows to go over there and just cut the guy's right hand off. Like, that would be okay. Jitsu's punishment for Skeletor. If Skeletor doesn't like something that somebody comes, he's like, "Jitsu, take his right hand." And just like, that's his trademark. You know Jitsu's been here because he's cut off this peasant's right arm for not paying taxes or something like that.
He's got a whole bunch of one-armed Eternians just going around here, all these peasants.
Yeah, or you know Jitsu has been here because somebody's missing the right arm. It just like it's his trademark, you know. And that's just me, you know, throwing stuff. But I see it as a very cruel way of building him up as somebody who's like, he enjoys what he does. He knows if he's told, take his right arm, or go out to the sands of time. There's a, you know, that he would provide me with a new dragon pearl. He lied to me. It's a fake. Go take his right hand. Injitsu would take, be somebody who would take great pride and pleasure in walking out there on, or going out there on Night Stalker, approaching this peasant and pulling the guy's arm out and slicing it and letting the guy sit there and suffer and scream in pain. And he gets back on Night Stalker and heads back to Snake Mountain. He's like, I love my job because he is just a real evil prick. That's how you do a bad guy.
Oh, sure. I mean, like I said, there's so many cool things you've been done with him. But I remember when the Horseman did those jewels, I started getting all these thoughts in my head of maybe the jewels all having certain kind of powers. Like maybe hitting one and it creates a smoke screen or makes him turn into stealth mode. Another one he hits, maybe it would turn his hand into like zzz, like a saw or something. It spins rapidly. I've just seen those jewels as being an enhancement upon what he could do. It would just be so
cool. I don't like the idea of an enhancement because to me, like that. I just like the idea of the big hand. Like, I'd like to think that he doesn't need enhancements. Like,
but
that,
I think he can make it cool.
The big right hand is the enhancement to the character. This is just me arguing with you here. Not saying you're right or wrong here.
Like I said, I was picturing other things. Like I said, just in case they were wondering, things of jazzing him up, in case they were ever going to bring back thinking, well, he's a big hand, just a big hand. What else could he do? Because you know how they're going to want to be morons about it anyways. Like,
no, then you're going to have some Michael Bay idiot decide, you know, One plays bebop music. Gives him a Pepsi in his hand for product placement or some nonsense like that.
Don't say that.
You're giving those morons at Sony too many bad ideas right here, Joe.
Well, like I said, I like the ideas of stealth, smoke screen, maybe some other thing kind of powered up, but I just pictured different things that those jewels could do. Like there was a purpose of them besides being just pretty little jewels. I felt like if they could do something to enhance, it'd be cool. I don't know.
I wonder if the horsemen, when they design that, as they're designing it, come up with them, then there is. Because I'm sure a lot of people, like William Stout, when he's designing Beastman and Blade, he's coming up with backstories for these characters. I like to think that when the horsemen are designing Jitsu, and you know they enlarge so many parts of these characters, but adding those jewels to his gold right hand, you can't help but wonder they had to have had a meaning behind that, at least in somewhere. You know, maybe it was enhancements, maybe it was just to show that, you know, this guy is wearing and it could be anything.
It would be something interesting to find out because, I mean, like you said, when they did show that new figure, didn't it look jointed, really metal, like jointed, like it could?
They added so many details, like his fingers could move almost, you know, it wasn't cool. Just a solid piece, like, which I like that idea that it's like Mr. Han in Enter the Dragon. He has all these replacement hands, like he's got that one, like, concrete hand. But Jitsu's is one that cannot be removed. Like, it stays on there, but it's one piece. But with their version, yeah, it looks like he can move. It's articulated, but it is kind of like it's like a robotic attachment, you know, like RoboCop or something like that. You know, it's. Yeah.
And I don't know if they ever, like you said, if they did explain it, but hopefully one day it'd be.
I mean, well, no. As far as I know, they never did. But what I'm curious is when they design it in the back of their head, are they coming up with logic behind these jewels on his hand?
They could,
you know, because it was such a distinct feature.
Yeah,
you know, so.
Well, that was a big discussion on Jitsu. Somebody, like I said,
and I could do more. If people want to hear more about Jitsu, you send us, even if it's 100 people. Don't care what it is. You want us to hear talk more about Jitsu, I will make sure we devote more time to talking about this badass of martial arts.
Well, he deserves, like I said, he deserves more attention, hopefully in future media, cartoon, movies, whatever it may be, comics, we get some. So, that's Jitsu. So now we'll finish it up with a mini comic that you usually don't hear many people talk about much, and that's Magic Stealer. And that's where we got, well, everybody always wondered, where did Procrustes come from? You know, it's like, well, Procrustes came from Magic Stealer. Unfortunately, you really didn't see much. That's the thing. It's like we got a really cool figure of him, but you don't see really anything out of him except maybe.
It's one of the most pointless introductions of a character that, you know, clearly was, you kind of makes you wonder, something got lost in the transition from script to page.
It was kind of sad because, okay, you find out, obviously, that Skeletor's plan is to try to, he has this new device, and he's in the North Pole of Eternia, whatever. He's going to sap all the magic throughout Eternia to make him strong enough to finally defeat He-Man. But within doing this, it pulls... Well, because they said it's basically might, you know, pull what's holding Eternia together. And, well, of course, Procrustes is what's holding Eternia together. He is with his four arms. You picture this poor being, this beast, this creature, whatever, this giant. I could just see him in the center of Eternia holding it. It's like, what a life. But anyways, the life presence of Eternia and its magic, since he's that, he's being drawn to this too. And as he comes out of the ground, coincidentally, that's where He-Man is with the attack track. He was like, no, you don't want to do this. You got to hold Eternia together. So He-Man, I think he shoots him with the attack tracks, lasers.
Yeah, when you look at that, and Seinfeld fans can appreciate this. It's like when Seinfeld and Newman decided to make an alliance, you know, an alliance. Now get the hell out of here. That's what happened in this scene here. He's like, no, I need you to hold Eternia together. Now get the hell out of here. And shoots the guy. You know, you're just like, dude, he's not fighting you. He's not attacking you. Why the hell is He-Man shooting him? You know, just, it's like, you're in my way, and I want to use the gun. You know, it just, one of those moments where I'm like, okay, I don't like to question logic in these things because they're sword and sorcerer tales, but to shoot this humble giant who just crawled out of the earth, who's holding the planet together, and you decide you're going to shoot him, not only that, but a blast from the attack track seems to shoot this thing back down into the ground.
Yeah, and then apparently that
makes you wonder how feeble is this guy who's holding the planet together if a blast from the attack track can send him, you know.
And then he sits there and agrees with He-Man. Yes, I'll do that. And
oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're right.
Hey. After he agrees, He-Man still shoots him.
I know, that part always cracked me up. It's just so strange. He comes out, no, you got to stay here, blast. He shoots him back down, and Procrustes is like, okay, USA. It's like, I don't even know.
But, and then you can imagine, like, as He-Man, like, you know, he falls down to the ground, kind of picks his head up, looks out, and He-Man's looks back laughing maniacally like that evil street sweeper in The Simpsons. You know, when he runs over Bart's bike, and then He-Man falls down the mountain top, you know, laughing on the attack track all the way down to the bottom.
Right, so it was, this one was, I mean, it's a really beautiful comic to, again, look at. Like,
yeah.
Some of the story is pretty cool, but Mark Texaire is the one who did the art. Great art. But the other thing I like seeing was, as the energy is being drained from all the magical parts of Eternia, you see Teela for a second, like, have an issue, because you remember she's the clone of the sorceress, so obviously...
Yeah, which you kind of feel like, if people are not familiar with that, that's the only reason that Teela could be having, you know, stomach discomfort or lightheadedness, weakness, whatever, is... If you didn't know that, because they don't make mention of that.
No, you'd have to know from the tale of Teela that...
You would have to read Mark Texaire's run on these, which I like to think are kind of done in continuity.
Pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close, like, but yeah, if you were coming to this and you're just reading random stories in, you know, this book, or you got a bunch of the mini comics for the first time and you read, you know, Double-Edged Sword, then you go back and read... You know, the magic stealer. It's not going to make sense of why Teela is being bothered by something like this. But I can appreciate that, because they're encouraging you to read the tale of Teela before you read this. What they're doing.
Right, to wonder what's going on. Like, why is she being weak, too? That was good, because then you see when, you know, the sorceress, goddess, however you want to call her, she was taking it hard. I mean, she was really getting sick and drained of energy. And then she comes to He-Man and lets him know what's going on. And he was like, well, just teleport me there or send me there. She's like, no, I'm too weak. You're going to have to take the attack track. So she was looking real drained. But obviously, you see Teela, it's affecting her, but not as much as it is for the goddess. But then they kind of, it almost seemed like they almost disregarded it, because then when He-Man's getting the attack track, it looks like they're all standing up, this goddess, the sorceress, and Teela, like, hey, see you later. And they look all energetic. It almost,
yeah, they all had like a V8, you know, and that guy kind of gotten back together, and they're all like, yeah, you know what, I'm feeling pretty good right now. They had a shot of head protein shake, and
So there's some parts that, you know, I mean, like I said, it's just a fun story either way. But yeah, you could question if you want to nitpick. But we get to see Zoar, and Zoar as a...
Yeah, I like the use of Zoar in this book. It's not one that's like, this ain't filmation. Like, no, it's cool to think that...
Toy. You know,
well, because that's what the bird was. In the toy line, it is a heroic barbarian bird that's there to help He-Man. That's it. Yeah. So it's cool to see Zoar used as that in this.
Yes, and they mentioned they referred to Zoar as he, because like you said, that's how it was originally before we got the whole different thing from Filmation. But he got to get in business, you know, doing some shooting his little lasers. You've seen that even Skeletor drained out like some of the magic from Kessel Grayskull, and you see these demons, these creep, you know, these like spirits come out. And it looked like he actually had them work for him towards the end, like they were kind of battling towards He-Man and Zoar. You know, He-Man, if it saves the day, it's not like we're, like, again, we always do, you know, little bits and parts of these comics so you guys can still read and experience for yourself. So, I mean, it's a fun adventure. You know, you get some, like I said, little parts of logic you can always question. But at least then you can find out, like I said, you know, you see where Procrustes comes from for those who never knew who he was. I mean, he had the quickest debut and in exit in history. Like I said, he comes in almost like in a Royal Rumble where the warlord comes in, then he gets clotheslined and knocked out and he's gone.
Or better than, one of the, I forgot, it's either Bushwhacker, Luke, or Butch, comes right into the ring and then is grabbed and taken over to the other side and thrown up, and then he walks right back. That's Procrustes right here. You know, even the people like the Bushwhackers, it's such a very unimpressionable appearance of a character that you build up is like this is what holds Eternity together. But you shoot him once and he falls back down the hole.
He's
not confrontational. You know what? You take care of that, He-Man. You know, get the hell out of here.
For one last little wrestling reference, for those who might know this, I know what Procrustes' debut. You see, you're waiting for this gigantic debut, this big character. What's going to happen? You're hearing this name. And when he comes out, he busts through a wall and falls down. He's the Taskmaster. That's who he is.
The Shockmaster, not Taskmaster. That's Sullivan.
See, I didn't know. Yeah, there you go. Shockmaster. I'm sorry, Shockmaster. And that was the guy
who played Taskmaster. He's little Kevin Sullivan.
Whoops, my bad. No, Shockmaster. Yeah, that tugboat.
You know, one-man gang on the chain.
There you go. But yeah, so he just came in, he fell down, and that was the end of it. But oh, poor Procrustes. Like I said, he did not have much of a debut, but we got a cool figure. In fact, like I said, if they had an anti-Eternia, maybe instead of holding an Eternia together, he'd rip it apart. See right back there. See him back at me? That's from a buddy right there.
Yeah, you know, product placement,
anti-Procrustes for Paul Rudman. But yeah, so he'd rip it apart. So that's kind of the magic stealer. So, well, what do you have for any closing remarks? Oh, wait a second. Before you do your closing remarks, we have to go to our takeaways from Dirt. So, Dirt, what kind of takeaways do you have from this episode? I'm not hearing him yet. Are you hearing him, Tyler? I don't hear him.
No, I think
how about now? Can you hear me now?
There he is.
There we go. All right. In 1984, I actually started the third grade, which means I'm very old compared to Tyler.
I don't want to say what grade I am because then it's going to make me seem even older than you. So, never mind.
Moving on. Tyler gave a hand clap to the chat room for understanding Seinfeld and getting the references. However, I must chide the chat room because a lot of them are way too focused on how good She-Ra looks, especially in that statue. We had a little X-rated chat here. Just so you know.
Well, she did have a nice butt shot. I'll admit, there's a nice.
Yes, people start talking about bumping uglies with the Princess of Power there.
You know,
well, she's hot.
For the honor, what can I say? Finally, Tyler, you wanted Jitsu to be cutting the hands off of people, like Yakuza Hitman. I want to ask you, though, have you really thought about the ramifications of that? What's going to happen at the 87th annual Eternian Robo Race?
What does that mean?
But you have a bunch of one-armed guys trying to row the rowboat because they got no arm on. You're, never mind. I'm back to you guys.
I kind of only had a Frank Drebin moment there, you know.
I don't even know what happened because
like Doug was like playing the gadget specialist that was making all kinds of stuff, and he said something, and he just kind of like, wait, did I hit what? Wait, what did he say? What do you mean by that? Let me take this urine specimen from you there, Tyler. You know, if you don't know what I'm talking about.
For whatever
reason. That would be very detrimental to that robot race. Yes, that would be
glitchy.
Severe ramifications for that.
Yeah, when you both talked, I actually didn't hear a thing. Somehow it sounded like you both got glitched on me, so I didn't hear anything. But, well, there you go. So, well, Tyler, what are your recommendations, or what you got to close off the show from your?
I'd like to think that it's a pretty well beloved episode, but certainly one I'm not mentioning on here. I have a lot of favorites, and I have a top five, but then I have a whole slew of just solid episodes, and that would be Creatures from the Tar Swamp. From Filmation season one. It's just a simple story, but it gives us a look at Orko's how he arrived, and that would be used again in the later detailed episode Lessons in NYP. Lady Edwina, who's into flirting with her cousin, you're like, man, we got some kind of incest stuff going on here, and they don't shy away from it. I always thought that's kind of ballsy.
But they won't put Jitsu in the cartoon, but they can put that stuff. But go ahead.
Yeah, go figure on that. They had no problem with having Adam's cousin saying, if we weren't cousins, she goes like, I know what she's thinking right now, man. She's wanting him to unleash the power sword all over her. But I had no problem with that. But I'm like, you know what? I can appreciate that, man. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where George decides he's going to date his cousin. Just to piss off his dad. I did not plan that, people. It just flowed like wine that way. So anyway, it's a great simple episode. It's got the Trachosaur in it. Trachodon. Jeez, I can't believe I screwed that up as many times as I watched this episode on VHS. Trachodon. That would make a cool custom for Joel Mondo to engage in if he's not going to be, you know, trying to force us another Friday the 13th custom in He-Man style or something like that. There's your next custom. There, it's a Trachodon. That's what the fan community needs, is to track it on. So it's a great episode. It's a good, simple story, but it's in Skeletor successfully takes the Royal Palace just with this Trachodon. And it's a great episode. I think it's an appreciated episode, but it's not one that you go onto a Facebook discussion or some sort of forum. You're probably going to hear, you know, your typical problem of power and things like that. And you're like, eh. Creatures from the Tar Swamp, that's where it is, man. So that is my He-Man recommendation for this week.
Excellent. Okay, well.
What was that? What the hell did you just say? What is this? Excellent. Did you say that?
Yes, I said excellent. All right, well, anyways. As for me, I'm going to tell you the places to go. I'm going to tell you to go to fansofpower.com. Go to popculturenetwork.com. Go to HeManWorld.com. And on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe, He-Man is your ultimate fan group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
To survive a war, you gotta become war. Howard the Duck.
No, it ain't all Howard the Duck.
Oh, well, it's going to be covered everything. It's the birds in it. It's what Tom Hanks says. It's what Bruce Stern says to Tom Hanks.
All right. Oh, I covered everything. I think I covered everything, right? I just want to make sure. I didn't forget nothing. Okay.
What?
I don't know.
Wait. We only have a couple seconds left, but Joe, you didn't do your unmasking.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Joe, you're supposed to, you know, reveal to everyone your visage.
Quick, we only have a couple seconds.
All right, I've been promising it here. Hold on.